Dark Wings.
Dark Words.
A Game of Thrones podcast.
Episode 5.
The Wolf
and the Lion.
All right, welcome to episode 5. I am Chuck Davis, and with us this week is
Amy Bertasini,
Eric Grant Liana,
Eric Salonis,
Molly Welsh,
Brendan J.D. Riley,
Arch. All right, then. I had read from some different reviewers who often get, pre-screeners. I think they released like the first 5 episodes before this series began to a lot of online review journalists, and several different sources I had read said episode 5 is the best. If you think things are going slowly, just wait. It really, everything takes off with episode 5. And I'd have to agree. I think that totally happened. There was a lack of action, really, for a few episodes in some ways, which they kind of made up for here. They really sort of paid off the who's a better warrior tension thing going on between Ned Stark and Jaime Lannister in a really cool way. Just so awesome to see Jaime so disappointed that he didn't get to finish his duel the way that he had hoped to.
Yeah, that was a total bitch move.
And just really cool to see Ned fight and live up to his not his reputation exactly, but his sort of hinted at, like, I'm a badass, just don't mess with me.
We forget that he fought in all those wars and that he came out alive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Lord of Winterfell.
We get to see him be noble and a great guy and a good husband and a good father. But we don't get to see him be a great soldier.
Right.
Probably this is the only chance we're going to get to see that.
Yeah.
So that was good.
But they do talk about that a lot, I feel like, a lot in the book, that it is commented on by the people that are around him, into like Arya, you know, with her at Winterfell, especially in the growing up chapters when she's not allowed to do things and then he lets her. And then in the books, I feel like that's commented on.
Yeah, everyone in the family would have known him, seeing him training in the yard or whatever, or training them himself.
Yeah, but that he's not a big softy when it comes to battle.
Right.
He's a badass.
He's not afraid of the sight of blood like Renly was.
Yeah, the whole Renly Knight of Flowers thing and showing that, I'm not sure how I feel about that.
They made a choice.
They did make a choice.
They made a very bold choice.
Yeah.
Does that come out in the books and when? Because I'm still only in the second.
It's in the second book.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Well,
I'll get there soon.
Having only read the first book, let's just get your... What was your impression of Renly's character? And what he... What his motivations were? What was he up to?
There's not a whole lot of Renly in the first book, but I remember that when I started the second book and... So the whole thing about Renly and Stannis both kind of arguing about... We see Stannis and he's like, whoa, Renly. Now it makes sense. It kind of... I really like the... It's interesting because it's like, oh, okay, now I see maybe why he wants to be king. Because, his lover told him to.
Yeah, but that's a little bit invented for
that,
the show.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
That was
definitely.
Renly was perfectly ambitious on his own. And Loras just had stars in his eyes, really. Loras was never that scheming,
right,
or portrayed that way, and from what I recall. But it's very interesting how they wasted no time after introducing Loras' character to showing that there's...
Just one look.
I'm going to give this flower to this girl, but it's really for you.
Yeah.
that was
a little ridiculous.
Yeah.
I like the glance. I didn't need Littlefinger's little barb at Renly afterwards. I mean, but that was okay too, but it's just like, there's like, okay. And then, but I mean... It made sense because they were ramping up to the whole intimate scene with those two,
yeah.
Where Loras is shaving his lover.
But it was like a long,
yeah,
drawn out glance. Like anybody that was in that crowd would have been like,
"Yeah, the ten people that showed up."
Yeah, exactly.
I'm still a little underwhelmed by the use of extras and all of that.
Anybody would realize, except for Sansa, who's just do 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 do.
He's so hot.
He's so dreamy.
Where was the cape, man?
No. Where's the cape? He can't wear the cape. I mean, I think we see the cape before. In the books, we see the cape before that, because he wouldn't have worn it during the tourney.
To but fight when they bow, when they come out and bow,
he would have been... He was wearing the cape in the books when he came out and gave her the flower.
And then they, you know, he takes it off before they actually go into the tournament.
No, maybe they had to pay the actors more to be nude, and they had to cut it. I don't know. I really would have liked to see that. But you know what? They had some really good stuff that I didn't expect. The wooden stag that they showed during the tourney, that was that was beautiful.
Yes. Yeah.
And then I finally saw during the council scene the tapestry of
the trident battle.
Yes, of the trident battle. And there was some really, I mean, the Eyrie, I can't ever say it. The Eyrie.
The Eyrie.
The Eyrie, thank you.
Eyrie, they call it this week.
The Eyrie did. It was pretty breathtaking, and I wanted it to be taller, but I was pretty satisfied with the images that I had, but I still
and
wanted
more
it to be a
pointy.
Little.
Right. It was going to be like a giant spire, because where the keyhole is... Right. I feel like very important.
Yeah.
And it's underwhelming in that sense.
Well, and then the journey, it was again, that whole Catelyn, you know, we didn't see her journey
to
King's Landing. There was nothing there.
And that whole ordeal. Yeah.
It took like 3 days, it like, and it was this big deal, and Catelyn, that's when her doubt about Tyrion starts to set in, which, I'm sorry, not, Tyrion. And, but they did a really good job of dealing with that on the
They glossed the over so much stuff that has to do with the Veil.
We don't even see her uncle yet.
Most notably, they may have written the Blackfish out of the show.
I hope not. He's kind of cool.
He is cool, but he's not pivotal.
Yeah.
At least not in the first 4 books.
So then I wonder if they're even going to do stuff with her dad then, too, because that was... There's the whole relationship between them.
They'll definitely end up at River Run.
Right, yeah.
But I don't know that we're going to see a lot of Lord Hoster Tully. Mm-hmm. Obviously,
certainly not in this season.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even if they even get there this season.
Yeah.
That's like a whole nother set they have to pay for. So they might push that one off.
So everyone watch so they can get lots of money.
Our friend Solomon Kleinsmith, who has not read the books and he leaves after the show, the one thing he did say during the episode was like, that's the coolest throne ever when we got there. And it was. The interior of that throne room was beautiful.
Is that from the book? The fact that the Eyrie's throne is like this big weirwood thing?
I can't remember, but it fits, I think. But I don't remember.
All I remember was that the weirwood, that the heart tree that grows in the godswood of the Eyrie was really tiny and fragile because it was so far from the earth or whatever. It couldn't grow.
But it was in there. Don't they talk about it being...
Because that's what they fight.
Sorry, spoilers, but the sword fight, don't they talk about it being there with...
I thought they did that in... They didn't do that in the throne room.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
That happens in, like, the garden.
In the garden.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
I don't know.
Or in the godswood?
Again, we need a book on the table.
Right.
I don't remember. It's some garden area. I don't remember if it's a godswood or not.
I don't remember either.
And then the door in the ground... Isn't there supposed
the moon
to be like
door.
Yeah,
the moon door. I didn't see that. Was that there?
It wasn't in the ground though in the books. At least I never pictured it that way.
Or it was just on.
It was just
on
just
a wall.
It was on a wall.
Yeah.
It was on a wall.
But
there
was on the ground.
I think you do see it though. It kind of looks like the well.
Wasn't that well thing in the middle
the well
of the room
between them
I don't
and
know,
the throne?
Out, I suppose. But.
Speaking of the scene in the throne room in the Eyrie, I think we discussed maybe last week if HBO was going to have the balls to show the nursing scene.
Otherwise known as the gratuitous sucking episode.
Yes.
Right, yeah, thank you. But there was still, I mean, I think every single person in the room was like, ah! But there still was that sense of all of us had our mouths open, like, thank you, HBO.
Yep,
there are some things that they're leaving out, but then they're like, balls to the wall, here you go.
Well, it was clearly a fake breast. Which
is
probably the only way they can pull it off.
But I mean,
unless that was her kid, and that'd still be weird.
I think they were good at showing that she was unhinged.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
As Tyrion
because,
put it, touch.
Yeah. But she's totally unhinged, which I think was a good setup for where we're about to go. So.
Yeah.
Definitely hit the right tone for that character.
She's
like, oh my god, I don't want to. Just the way that Tyrion and Kat both. Just
their faces,
and then the like slight glance to each other at that
just
moment.
Just like,
we're
oh
like,
my
god, what have we gotten ourselves into?
Maybe
yeah,
I should have here. Liza had the crazy lines on her face. Actually,
was everybody satisfied with the jailer?
Mord, yes,
Mord.
Yeah.
Mord was good.
I don't feel like I got enough to make an opinion, honestly. In this episode,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Didn't you mention that he was supposed to take Tyrion's cloak, but he didn't even ever have one in the first place. Didn't happen. So.
It was actually Marillion, I think, the...
That guy's already annoying. They're doing a good job.
Was it Marillion? Did he have the cloak to begin with or something?
I don't recall.
Yeah, it was one of the dudes that... it was one of the bannermen, the Tully House bannermen, and he took it off them, and then Tyrion took it off the bannermen that had died in that little scrape, and then, yeah, the jailer took it from him.
The jailer took it from him.
Oh, was it the musician?
I thought Marillion, the bard, ended up with the nice cloak.
What am I thinking of then? I can't remember.
But no,
Tyrion did something
clever to get it back, and then the jailer took it from him. Oh, he gives it to the jailer.
I think he gives it to the jailer.
Yeah.
He gives it to the jailer in his little pact of... Please, for God's sake, go and tell your mistress that I'm ready to confess or something.
Yeah.
So, so that wouldn't happen until...
Until he'd spent, like, weeks in the cell. Or something.
So
like
probably
that.
Next episode.
I feel like we're missing a lot of the seagulls that each house has, you know, like
the sigils. We had this conversation in the first podcast, and I was schooled.
Not actual
sigils.
Flapping birds, but sigils, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I feel like we're missing out a lot of that on the Bannermen. Like, it's being called out, but, like, the actual showing of it,
right.
Of people belonging to each house, because I feel like in the books that is so important that's noticed by everybody, that people wear what their house is mm-hmm. on them at all times.
I did like that we went through that with Bran this week. That was nice.
Yeah.
It was a little quiz for everybody. That was a good way for them to throw that in there.
That
the
is
map.
A great way for some backstory, but also building up that Maester Luwin and Bran relationship, mm-hmm. which is pretty important.
Which is very good, I thought. I thought they really did that well, that he's this teacher that really cares about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, especially after he woke up, which is when we see it the most.
And they pile on more Greyjoy backstory.
Yeah, I actually really like that. I'm like, good, we're taking us to where we need to go with him. This is good.
Fuck you,
earlier you said something about nudity. First cock shot in the
series. Yeah,
first cock shot.
Thanks for
representing
Theon.
Was there a cock shot?
Oh my god.
He was behind the chair.
I should know
before
that.
Like, as he pulls out of her, and he's like, oh, look at my dog.
Yeah.
Is there a first bad shot too? We got the front of it, but
I didn't see it. I
was looking at the cock. Sorry.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The uncircumcised Greyjoy cock.
That was great. Well, then the fact that she's like, I've got your cock.
Well, and like that was a nice setup with her too, about him taking authority with his house too, and like, no, I'm not fucking ward, like I am.
Yeah.
Our family fucking rules the Iron Islands, and like,
well, they're telegraphing these things that we don't, as readers, didn't pick up until the second book.
Yeah,
well,
is
he doesn't even touch on until
the
second,
third
books come along. But I think they kind of have to do that, you know, because it's just because you have such a compressed amount of time with these episodes that you've just got to throw some things out. Like, in the books, you don't really get into what it means to be a bastard until you get to the Eyrie, when they're going up the path to
Maya
and you find out that it's Maya Stone, and that because she was born in the Eyrie or that area, she gets the
stone
name.
That's
why Jon gets the snow name and things
mm-hmm.
like that. And you just don't get that until this late in the story, in the books. But, you know, I mean...
Well, they threw a little
bit in the river and... Yeah.
But I think HBO has been doing a very good job of taking things... And being fairly selective in some regards about taking things from later books and adding them into this series early on to help, you know, new viewers who don't know the books get that backstory that is really kind of needed to help the story along.
Yeah. I'm really impressed with the way they waste no opportunity to squeeze in some little tidbit of detail.
Absolutely.
Yes, they really do a good job building the world and the way that it works, it seems to me.
One interesting thing that's the difference between, you know, TV versus book. In the first book, the scene where Arya is in the dungeons and she just hears two people talking. I honestly, reading the first book, I wasn't sure who it was in the darkness, but there it is on TV. It's Illyrio and Varys.
Yeah. That was a cool thing about the book, though, because he specifically left you wondering.
Mm-hmm.
Even though... I mean, you could go, that sure seems like it's Illyrio. Because
he says the forked beard. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you don't know for sure.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, like, Illyrio's like the only forked beard character.
Yeah.
Well, and in that particular scene, which is one of my favorites in the books because it's so dark, and the only thing, she can just feel them. I don't remember her being able to see any more than just what was right in front of her with the skulls.
She
could way...
It was pitch black.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. They had a torch.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were the source of light.
And she was right. The shadow, and she was following them, trying mm-hmm. to get information, and she caught the damn cat. And I but I liked what they did and how they took the dragon skull and she crawled inside of it.
Which
like,
was
that's
awesome.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And then she didn't see them, which crawling inside the skull was the perfect way for her not to see them. Mm-hmm. But I remember reading it when she went to tell Ned what she had heard, and she couldn't articulate it because she's 9 and they were talking in code.
And she said something about a wizard.
And it
was
sort of
great. I mean,
the same.
They do keep talking as they trail off, yeah. And the Varys mm-hmm. is saying something like, well, the game was never meant to be played with only 2 people.
That's actually one of my favorite lines of dialogue in the first book that Arya says that unfortunately we didn't get in the TV is at one point when the two of them are talking, she's listening to everything they say, and at one point they're talking about some situation being so ridiculous it's almost like a mummer's farce, and then Arya, like, when she's talking to her father, she's like, and then they said this and this and this and it was a mummer's farce, and like it's just that's like the end of her speech.
Like, go to your room.
I want to hear somebody say mummer's farce in this series, yeah, because that's like one of my favorite expressions.
Well, doesn't Ned even think what were,
yeah,
were they mummers?
Well,
you mentioned the thing about her catching the cat. That's one of my favorite little subtle details from the books that I think I picked up on, is she says how, okay, I've caught every cat in the Red Keep except for this one mean old Tom that's like missing an ear or something like that, and it's just like this tough old cat, and that's the one that she's going after.
Mm-hmm.
That
was a pretty well groomed Tom cat.
Like later in the books,
and
I think
trained.
There's a reference. I think Robert maybe is telling Ned that he once caught Joffrey torturing a cat.
Yeah.
And then like Cersei tells Sansa at some point something about this cat that still roams the castle or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought that was a cool little bit of just total not important detail. But
right.
Just imagine that this mean old cat that Arya sort of has this battle of wits with is this poor cat that
Joffrey
tortured. When it was a kitten or something.
Or can we talk about Lancel's face?
Oh my!
I want to talk about Lancel's face.
And how you just want to smack it?
Yeah. Well, Robert had some really great scenes this time, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, we already know how he feels about Lancel, so they had to like up the ante a little bit, and it was just watching Lancel's face. Like, he was more interesting to watch than the king was, because you already know they've kind of made him a little bit one note right now. For me.
Yeah.
He's not. But I mean, the scene with Cersei helped.
Moments here. Talking about Lyanna Stark was too dumb.
Yeah.
How did everybody feel about that scene with Robert and Cersei?
We were talking
too
about
long.
It a little bit beforehand, yeah.
Yeah.
That was too long?
It was way too long for me. It was just, they got into too much. Like, I liked the start of it, and I liked some of the things that they touched on, but it was just too much between the two of them together. And for me, after 17 years of this marriage where neither of them want to have anything to do with either of them,
I think maybe what they were trying to do, my theory on it, is that they're trying to give a reason for her, like more of an emotional reason to do what she does to Robert later on.
I think it was like, that's the closure she needed to finally decide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If he had said, maybe I felt something for you once, he might still be king at the end of this series.
I mean, it wasn't necessary. I don't know if it was necessary, but I do agree. I think that was their motivation.
That's what it
seems
like they're trying to do to me, at least. But I did enjoy the fact that we do see a little bit of realness between them, because that's not in the books at all, but I do agree that it was...
They have some real conversations, but they're real heated, usually.
Yeah. And I meant just real, like, because we really haven't seen, you know, them in the same place talking to each other, honestly. Yeah.
I like that they brought back up the first son.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I'm going to accept the direction
that
they're taking Cersei in, I enjoy that they're being consistent about it, and I like that she's saying there was something once and now not, and that's why she's turned doing what she's doing. But I like in the books that Cersei and Jaime's relationship has always been that way since they were kids. Like, it's always just made sense to them to be with each other, to confide in one another and have that. But I like that, you know, she's going for it, and that Lena Headey is fantastic. So, I mean, unfurl the brow maybe once in a while, but but the rest of the time, I'm liking where, like, her commitment and where she's going with where Cersei's headed.
When does she not have that eyebrow cocked?
Right?
Yeah.
It's just a little odd. And, I mean, of course she's supposed to be acting and, she's reading every situation and she's not an open book. But I still do miss some of those images that I see in my head of her always being surrounded by the Queen's party. She goes everywhere by herself. You know, she's not wearing a corset or anything. It's just like, I need some fantastical Cersei. I need to see like the queen bitch at the top of the pack, surrounded by her minions.
Maybe they'll ramp that up more when she starts to rule a bit more on her
own.
I imagine that's coming.
I was happy just to see her smile in a scene that was like genuine.
Yeah.
Like that moment of her like laughing with Robert, I was like, oh my god, she is human. Like, this is good. Because I don't feel like in the books you really get that from her until she starts getting her own chapters. I don't know if it's in book two or three.
There's one, I can think of one scene that she shares a laugh with Tyrion.
Yes, I know it's in
it's
book
right
three. It's,
yeah, but I mean, early on now,
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
because
they get some good news that they share, and then they have a light moment together.
It's like the only light moment those two characters have together.
Exactly.
The only thing I didn't like about the scene was at the end where she was like, I feel nothing. And then she puts down her glass and then, like, walks out of the room. And it's like, well, obviously you feel something because you just got
left. Feel nothing.
Ooh, calling her out, Amy.
Well.
At least she didn't, like, throw it in his face.
Yeah. Bitch, please!
Well, and there were a lot, for all of us who've read the books, there were a lot of moments in this episode, you know, where Jaime and his dudes, we know what's coming, and all of us were like, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. And there were scenes where we were like, what is this? Why are they talking to each other? Where is this going? But then there were little things that I hadn't thought of before. One of them was during the Varys and Littlefinger scene.
Which was hilarious.
Was
great.
Yeah.
This place is crawling with subplots. there was one
Who's
moment where he talks about the last place that he saw him was talking to Eddard. And the only person that saw them was Jory. And I was like, does that mean Littlefinger has Jory in his pocket? What does that mean? Mm. So he asked him in that last episode, who is your most trusted? Who are you going to send to Sir Hugo? And he sent Jory. So that made me a little sad that Jory wasn't this, like, he was the he's the first one to go. You know, the first one that we've been with for a while to
Did Jory
to
die
go.
There?
Jory
stuck
did.
A knife through his
eye. Yeah.
No, I mean, okay.
I'm sorry.
In the book, he's supposed to die.
Yeah.
Jory does die there. This whole time I was watching under the misconception that Jory is the one that the guardsmen from the north that ends up with the Brotherhood Without Banners.
No, that's Jory. I think it's somebody's son. I can't remember who, though. I know what you're talking
about.
Well,
because Jory is Sir Roderick's son. So
okay.
But you're right.
It's someone's son or
Mickon's
something.
Son or something?
I think so.
Blacksmith? Okay.
I don't remember.
Well,
don't
that
Jory did die.
Because
yeah,
I confused myself, I was like super surprised to see Jory
die. Yeah, I mean, and that's why I was like, oh my god, Jory's gonna die in this episode because this is this part. But I was like, oh my god, Littlefinger has Jory. That's not something I ever thought of before.
Well, and also when Varys goes into Stark's room and looks out the door before he closes it at Jory.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like the Knight of Flowers look to, not in a sexual way, but I mean, come on. You know, I mean, it was so obvious like what they were trying to say with that look and that shot. I mean, I think it was pronounced.
Well, for me, it was that Jory's watching you. Was that Jory's recording?
Like,
Jory's pushing record.
Yeah. Well, and it was like Barry saying, "I know what you are." You know.
Well, but
he
was surprised
when
Littlefinger said out loud, "The last place I saw you was talking to the Hand of the King," and Varys was like,
"Abuh."
He was surprised by that. So maybe he thought he had Jory, or maybe he thought that because Jory was Ned's most trusted, that he wouldn't be in anybody's pocket.
Yeah.
That's what I got from it. Was
we'll never know.
He's looking at him.
Yeah, you can suspect all you want, but I think Jory will die with his honor intact.
Yeah, I think that he was with Littlefinger.
But it was very
He wouldn't. How else would? How else would he would have known that?
The glance that he exchanged. Well, not. The
no,
glance.
I don't think that glance had anything to do with it.
Oh, I think so.
I mean, in the brothel where like Littlefinger's
and she's like, look at my titties.
Lady is like, hey, Jory.
And I just think that he should have given Jory 5 minutes. That's all. I mean,
I don't think that it was necessarily Jory because I mean, if you look at the positioning of the room, just from what they show you from the outside and the inside, is that it is a hallway.
Yeah.
And that there are guards in the Red Keep that aren't just in front of Ned Stark's door, that are just his men, that there are other people here that could feasibly see him walk into Ned Stark's room.
Right.
That
and I agree with that.
I don't think that Varys was really all that surprised when he said that he was last saw him talking to Ned.
But he had a
It was when he said he was talking
to Illyria.
Illyria.
That's
when he really was surprised.
Fine. I'm going to hold tight to my theory, though. I think Jory was in Littlefinger's pocket.
Let us not forget the Red Keep is full of secret passages.
Yeah. Yes. Indeed.
We don't know how Littlefinger knew about Illyria's visit.
Maybe he really was under the bed.
Oh. God, I love that guy. It plays Littlefinger. Like he's quickly becoming my favorite actor on that show. Very quickly.
I am glad that we are getting to see more of Varys, actually, just because he's an intriguing character to me in the story. And you know, at first, in the first few couple episodes that we saw him, he didn't really do a whole lot. Like he was just briefly mentioned, or you briefly met him. So I'm glad he got some scene time in this episode.
He basically rose to a character of prominence with this episode.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, just the timing of it was bad because his two major scenes are back to back.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. He's in that scene speaking to Ned Stark, and then all of a sudden he's coming up from downstairs in the dungeon with Illyrio.
Yeah.
And then he has the Littlefinger scene.
Yeah, you're right. That's just like.
But what's great about all those?
There's power hour there.
In one of them, he says to Ned, "I want." I mean, somebody, I don't remember who said it on previous podcast, but that Varys seems to be the one, who has the good of the realm in mind. Like,
yes.
He's got
he's
a bigger picture.
Of the common people,
right.
I think.
So you've got him talking to Ned and saying, this is what's going to happen to you because it's what happened to Jon, and I'm telling you for the good of the order, whatever. And then he also says to Littlefinger, this is what's going to happen to him, and if the Lannisters know that you played any part of it, and cut your balls off. So there was this, like, he's double playing everybody. He's playing both sides of everything against everybody all the time.
Well, and what is his scheme, really, with Illyrio?
To facilitate
the return of the Targaryens.
That's what that's still open in the books, I think.
Yeah. Well, and maybe if it is true that his only concern is for the nation, is for the people... What if he does believe that the Targaryens were the best rulers?
As Robert says, you know, there are a lot of people still in the realm that consider the Targaryens to be the true kings, and that Robert is considered the usurper.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I've even, when I started reading the books, and I was like, you know, what if we're just seeing, I mean, these people believe they're right, you know, but what if we're seeing the bad guys? I really think that might be part of it.
Mm-hmm. I remember the line that I really liked in that Varys scene in the book that I'm talking about when he comes and sees Ned in the dungeon for the last time is he says he's talking about Ned's honor and how Ned always follows this code of honor, and he says something about how next time if you don't, you know, if you don't tell them what they want to hear, they could bring you Sansa's head on a spike or something like that. And he says the choice, my Lord Stark, is entirely yours. And it's like the last line I think that we hear him say in the first book, actually. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what does everyone think that my father's favorite part will be?
There's so many.
Cock shot.
I don't know. I don't know.
I am curious what your father will say about the whole Renly-Loras scene.
I think Bill will talk a lot about the nipple sucking.
Good call. We spent this afternoon with him.
Bill Welsh, it'll be about some nipple sucking.
Okay. Wasn't he unwrapping a bomb pop as they panned up?
Maybe the Loras Renly thing will destroy his theory about John and Samwell being the gay lovers.
I don't know.
Oh my god.
I don't know.
Molly's dead. Chicken in on the Game of Thrones.
Hello. No, I think my favorite thing overall about the whole show last night was the fact that there's so many twists and turns in this all the time. You know, it's as twisted as the people are. You know, I still can't figure out to what purpose Ned is running around trying to find out all of who Robert's bastards are. You know, what difference does it make? Only because his friend John was out looking too? And is that what got John killed? And if so, who killed him? You know, why would the king care about his bastards? You know, maybe the Lannisters would, because they would want to eliminate any claim to the throne other than their own. The king and queen understand each other almost perfectly. You know, the king appears like the natural good old boy that just wants to drink and do this and do that. But he understands his wife pretty well, and she understands him pretty well. But I don't think he understands the real depth of her depravity. And about the time you think that, she's back in there asking the king to bring Ned back. Why? Because maybe the enemy knows, and she figures, you know what? This guy is not a threat to us, really. What he is, he's going to be a good help to the king. In order for me to remain as queen and consolidate my power base, I have to keep the king, at least for a while longer. And the imp last night, I get a charge out of the imp. That imp's got a bigger pair of balls than everybody thinks he does. So he's a pretty brave little guy. You can't tell me. I'm thinking that and the two faggies. And how about Ned's wife's sister? Is she a jewel? I mean, breastfeeding that kid? You know, I think he's just a little old for that. But, you know, maybe not. Maybe not. Who else knows what goes on in that place? Yeah, I mean, how could that little fart, that little blonde prancing knight, get enough force behind his jousting stick, his lance, to knock that guy off his horse? I'm not so sure that that whole thing wasn't a setup for some reason. You know, maybe the horse was in heat. I don't know. Maybe that little guy was in heat when he saw that big guy on the other horse. Well, I think maybe the big guy was in heat for the little guy on the horse. And, you know, when he saw him, maybe his armor exploded from the inside out. You know, who knows? But it's picking up a little momentum now. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to next week.
Molly's dead, chicken in, on the Game of Thrones.
I have to say, speaking of crazy fathers, Tywin Lannister, they keep showing, or they keep talking about him, and
Charles Dance
is the actor, yes. And I just keep thinking of Last Action Hero, and how awesome he is in that movie. He's this crazy, crazy guy, and that line about Cersei, whenever she opens her mouth, her father's words come out. Like, that's going to be awesome. What a good build-up.
That was great foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Super excited about that actor. So
just to remind you that, that there is a history there with that amazing character. So when he does appear, it won't sort of feel like out of the blue.
Yeah, feel like we know him a little.
It'll be this kind of build-up to this,
Which I thought was done in the books well as well. I really liked when I saw... or read about Tywin for the first time, and when Tyrion meets him on the battlefield, it's like, oh yeah, this guy's a kind of a badass.
How do we learn it? I think it's Tyrion telling Bronn the tale of his first wife.
Bronn, badass.
Bronn is a cowboy. He's a cowboy of Westeros.
No, I'm just that they gave us so much about Bronn on the road right when that fight broke out, so much right away.
Yeah.
Where you're just like, oh my god, he is fantastic.
How awesome was it that when he took that guy's head off, it was like he was prying open a bottle cap.
Oh my god.
It was
great. They kept the dialogue where after the battle he says, you want a woman after battle, and Tyrion says, I'm willing if she is. Because that is in the book.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny. Yeah.
He looks at Caitlin. Yeah.
That was
such a great read by Peter Dinklage, the way he said it too.
Yeah.
Just like, just still worried from battle, just like making a quip but not really even committing to
it.
And then they both realized how funny it was.
And the stuff about the Eyrie being impregnable. Thank you. All that stuff straight from the books. I liked that.
Thank you.
I'm super excited about Bronn because we saw in the upcoming. You see him standing there saying he wants to confess, and everybody who's read the books know exactly what he's going to confess that he's manipulated this into. Very excited to see how that all turns down. And that makes me wish, I really wish I could go back and watch this for the first time without knowing what he's going to do, because it's gonna throw everybody, and Peter Dinklage is going to be that much cooler.
I think it's my favorite scene from the whole first book.
Yeah.
Is kind of Tyrion's trial at the Eyrie.
It's in Bronn's defense of him as his defense lawyer.
Yeah,
so cool. As
your attorney. I mean, we see this little, we see that little moment when on the fight and how awesome Braun is. So when we get to that point, I just really want to see him kick some ass.
I noticed we were wondering before, you know, why it was going to take so long to get to the Crown of Gold scene later on. I noticed in this episode we didn't see Dany.
Oh, yeah. Was there no Daenerys at all?
No,
yeah.
Daenerys, there's no Daenerys.
No Jon.
Yeah.
But which in the books, where I was the chapters.
Still, we went over
there
in the credits.
Yeah, the title sequence we went over.
Yeah.
They went through Dothrak, yeah.
I think that's just a part of the credits regardless.
We
see how they're going to
It wasn't in the first episode. They only went to Pentos.
Yeah, I suppose.
Well, and that is weird that they added the Eerie, but they left
the
in. Maybe it's just because of all the talk of all the impending.
That could be. Yeah.
Yeah. That they left it in as a presence.
And
then they brought in Yeomen.
Yoren.
Yeah, they brought in Yoren, so maybe that's what it is that since Illyria was there and Yoren.
Well,
and they
Wall.
Were talking about
well,
killing
that's what I mean, though, but Illyrio's Pentos. So.
Plus
well,
the scene about talking to killing.
Good point. There was no Jon scene either, was there?
No, but I feel like Jon and Dany stuff goes hand in hand. Like, you can't do an episode with Dany without doing an episode with Jon.
She's a believer in my theory.
I'm a believer.
I believed in myself for a while.
In my world.
It just seems too obvious.
I mean, I got done with the first book, and I was like, yes, hello, two of the three.
Now, I can't remember, since we were talking about Yoren, I can't remember in the books if Ned did say to Jaime that it was, you know, that it was his order that got Tyrion arrested. Because in the episode, when he's like, where's my brother? He's like, oh, well, yeah, it was my order that they arrested him, even though
he had no idea.
Did he say that in the book? Okay.
Yeah, actually, I couldn't remember when he actually said it in the TV episode, like a light bulb went off in my head.
Yeah.
I was like, I remember that from somewhere.
Because I really like that moment that he's like, well, I mean, she's my wife, and I trust her judgment, so I'm going to just defend her in any way that I can. This is cool.
From the moment in between him meeting the latest bastard and what happened with Jaime, there was no, I thought it was pretty seamless. It was kind of a throwaway scene in the brothel a little bit, so I'm wondering how they're going to bring it all back around town to tie all those bastard things together and do the big reveal.
Well, there's a big push to start killing off the bastards before long here, isn't there?
Yeah.
And that's where Gendry has to skip town.
Yeah.
So, we probably won't get to see Cersei and Ned in the Weirwood, do we?
No, we do.
No, we will.
There is an episode coming up that the specific line is, you win or die.
Okay, because I thought...
Right?
It happens after his
injury.
That's right. Yeah. I thought that he got captured after, or right at that moment, that was the moment that he got arrested after the fight with Jaime.
No.
I was remembering.
I think that will be in the episode where all the shit hits the fan.
Right.
It's you win or die. And what's going to happen?
Yeah.
But now that Yorn is there, like that to me is that's the kicker. That's probably my favorite is Arya's.
Yeah.
What's happening with Ned and where Arya is at that time and
that's
Yorin and
that.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly
there,
what I thought
so.
When
well,
I saw Yorin show up and I'm like, oh my God, things are.
I
said that right during the middle of the episode. I said
we're going,
wow, this is happening quickly now.
Can we talk about just for a second? I want to go back just because we haven't mentioned it. Is the Hound in the mountain fight?
Oh,
yes.
Gosh.
I mean,
okay.
For the love of God, a fucking horse's head came off.
Yes.
That was awesome. I mean, that was fantastic.
I have a stupid question. I thought that in the books that the mountain was down and that the Hound went and helped him. Is that wrong?
Yes, it's wrong.
Why? I don't have that memory.
Was the mountain trapped under his horse briefly?
Yeah, I
or?
Thought that he, like, went down there and helped his brother, and that was the whole, even though he put his face into whatever he put his face into, that he's still
The way that I remember
him.
It is that he, that that, yeah, the horse fell on top of the mountain, and his, I thought his squires helped him out, because I the way that I remember it is that the hound didn't jump down. Yeah.
And comes running and helps
that the
him.
Hound didn't come down until...
I do remember the hound coming down and saying, like, leave him alone, you're whatever, you know, and like, and yeah, I do remember that.
Oh, I love that smile, though, when the mountain went down, and you just see that little crack of smile on the hound.
Yeah. I just don't remember that going down like that in the book, so I need to go back and look at it.
Yeah, I'm a little hazy on that, too.
And I really liked that choreography, at least, that fight. Especially when the mountain's swinging, Robert gets up and says, stop this, and he just kneels.
The moment that he sees Robert get up and, like, that first sound comes, he's already down.
Yeah.
Like,
and
it's beautiful.
It was good that we got the fact that he's not a sir.
Yeah.
That was good information.
And yet, he is the one who acts so much like one.
Yeah. Well,
and that's
so...
that's one of the things I absolutely love about his character from the books.
Wow.
Is because that is the one thing I get from
the
books.
Well, maybe not act
not
so
when,
much like
not when I ran down the butcher's boy.
Well, he is the hound. But he's a dog. He's loyal to who he thinks he needs to be loyal to, and at that point it was Joffrey.
But he has honor in a way. You know, I mean,
he's got his own sense of honor. I think that's what's great about
him. He certainly ran down the butcher's boy, and you know, he was probably ordered to do so. But you know, I mean, there are some people who find honor in that kind of thing. You know, and I think Ned would, in a way, I mean, he certainly would not agree with that, with the justice that was given to the boy. But I mean,
this is entertaining.
No, that's okay. He's trying to start some shit.
I think the hound has quite a lot of honor that is you know that I think comes through in the books, and I think they're doing a good job of having
still
it
waiting
in the show.
For that conversation with Sansa. Like,
there's an awful lot of Sandor, Sansa conversation missing,
mm-hmm.
and also they haven't done anything to repair Joffrey and Sansa's relationship at all.
Or at least give the presentation that Joffrey,
is
making an effort.
But they could do that after the tourney, because isn't that when it happens?
There's some banquet thing.
Yeah,
because I remember, like I said, I remember Septa Mordain gets drunk and
drunk Septa.
Which I hope they keep, because I'd love to see that.
Yeah.
I was just really disappointed with the tournament in general, as far as what they showed.
My wife made a good comment when we were rewatching it last week's episode. She's just like, it sure doesn't look like enough hubbub to explain what they were talking about on the small council about all the fights and violence and all the wars of walking bow-legged, and because so many people streamed into town for this event where there's like 100 extras.
Yeah.
Right.
Three
and
risers.
And there's just, I mean, it should be a festival. I mean, huge festival. People come in from miles around to come to this thing. And then they showed two jousts. They didn't even bother showing the melee tournament.
They didn't acknowledge that
which
there was a melee.
I think is
because they wanted Robert to be in the joust as well.
Exactly.
That's right.
They
and
should.
You also don't get things like, I mean, they brought in Beric in a different scene.
Did they?
Didn't they?
Not
Beric, but
Barristan.
Barristan. Barristan the Bold. That's right.
Yeah, we haven't seen Beric yet, have we? Because we're supposed to see him.
I thought maybe there's that scene from
Melee,
the previous episode
where
Ned and Joy go to visit the blacksmith, the armorer,
uh-huh.
and they're walking, and he says that Sir Hugh wouldn't speak to me because I'm not a knight, and Ned says, "Oh, knights, they strut around like roosters down here,"
mm-hmm.
and then they cut to a scene where you see a knight with kind of like a rainbow type cloak, but he's like an old dude with a beard. I don't know. For some reason, I was like, "Is that supposed to be Lord Beric?" Because I think in the books, I think he's first introduced just kind of coming to town for the joust.
Well,
you see him like.
Well, we see. Don't we see? Don't we see Tharros in the tournament at some point?
In the books, we do.
Yeah.
And they mentioned him. Yeah, exactly.
Which didn't happen,
and they mentioned him in the last episode. They were talking about it, flaming swords. And I really wanted to see a flaming sword.
I mean, that's really what I wanted.
If there are multiple seasons of this, you're going to see one.
Well, I'm sure.
A couple different versions.
Well,
you're
going to
see one.
Like, I mean, that was... I just really enjoyed that about the book. And, you know, I mean, he does spend quite a lot of time in the books talking about the tournament.
Yeah, and the spectacle of it. And the
spectacle of it.
I think just budget-wise, they just slashed that shit all out.
Well, yeah, you have to choose how you want to tell the story and what the focus needs to be. And really, it's wonderful. Like, I don't need any more spectacle right now. I mean, they can give it to me, but...
They're getting the story in, but yeah. They are shrimp, you know...
Paring down the
spectacle, the epicness.
Yeah, I was hoping for another little dream sequence this time, or maybe just like a shot of a direwolf.
I still feel like I'm missing out so much on all of that, the mystery that's in the books. I feel like that is with the animals just isn't there, that we see things that, you know...
Ravens. I want to see that they are
one and the same, you know?
Yeah.
That they are connected and that they can travel into...
We never see ravens like carrying messages.
The three-eyed raven was pretty cool. That was pretty awesome.
I thought it came in episode 2 late.
My one concern with the ravens, I mean, it hasn't been an issue because, like you said, they haven't been showing it at all. But that people would draw comparisons with the owls from Harry Potter. If they focus on it too much, it would just seem a little too Harry Potter-ish.
Well, I wasn't thinking about it until now.
Yeah. I don't think that would be a bad thing, though. I mean,
that's how they travel messages. You know?
Yeah.
That's how it is.
But, I mean, we're talking about all these, like, oh, they don't have enough extras. Where are all the animals? And it's, I mean, as much money as HBO has spent on marketing this series, you have to, I'm serious. I've never seen any television network market spend this much money on marketing.
Pay for a few less billboards and a few more direwolf CGI scenes.
Totally.
If we can have a horse's head cut off, we can have direwolf.
Thank you. See? If we can cut off a horse's head. If we can show dragon skulls and have a horse's head.
Which the dragon skull was pretty fucking cool.
Yeah.
I really like that. Well, it looks to me like because you see a lot of representations of dragon bones and stuff if you watch the types of movies that we do. And this one, I thought they're kind of going for that realistic, like if dragons were real. I was like, that's a saber-toothed Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Right.
Which might be what a dragon would be like. I thought it was really
awesome. But they kind of have to.
Yeah.
Because of where we're headed. Mm-hmm. You have to think about where we're headed and that whatever you're going to show us now is...
The dragon egg was out of its box.
I know.
Her hands,
I know.
A lot on her mouth. I'm excited. And I love it, Chuck. There was no like shot of the eggs today for your viewing pleasure.
That's
it was
right,
like, all right,
no,
are we
no
gonna have enough
of eggs?
I think the reason that the dragon skull impressed me so much was just because, amazingly, it was bigger than I had imagined it in the book.
Yeah.
Actually,
yes.
Whoa, damn, that's huge. Like,
don't they talk about how one of them you can ride a horse through its mouth?
For some reason, I was like.
That's a huge one. Because I remember talking about Aria. I think it was Aria. Somebody else was talking about how they get bigger.
We only get one in this episode. And there appears to only be room for the one in the room that
How could you fit another one in there? The room would be two dragon skulls, you know?
She totally could have fit through those bars. Just saying.
Yeah. I know, right? As soon as she grabs the lock, I was like, why don't you just slide through?
If there's one thing
Come
I
on.
Hate about
the director told me not to.
When they do that crap.
Come on.
Yeah.
I thought, because when we see the Valyrian blade steel with the dragon bone handle, it's black, and because they talk about in the books, he talks about how the dragon's bones are blacks, but that skull was not black. That's the only thing.
No, it was not.
I was like,
good point.
Yeah, good point. That would have been nice to see. I mean, especially if they're going to spend time talking about dragon's bone, how they use it in weapons and all of those things sometime, and getting to... the actual dragons, that might have been a very cool...
Mm-hmm.
Even a way to save money with foam, ladies and gentlemen. You know what I mean? That might have... I think that would have been better, yeah.
One thing
probably
about the dragons...
Probably.
I forgot to mention last week when Viserys was in the bath and he's naming off all the dragons.
Yeah.
One of them was named Vermithrax,
mm-hmm.
which I believe, because I just recently read a review of the movie Dragon Slayer from 1981.
Oh,
I think the name of the dragon in that movie was Vermithrax.
I think
that's a George R. R. Martin Easter egg.
Riley has a kid's book about a summer dragon that I will get the title of for the next podcast, but he that he wrote.
The ice dragon that I gave her.
Yes.
Yep, that's right. Dragon Slayer. I looked it up, and the first link it comes up, Dragon Slayer, Wikipedia. When Galen returns to the village, he finds that Vermithrax has already destroyed it.
Nice. Wow. Whatever. Good catch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, if anybody has kiddos out there, pick up George R. R. Martin's The Ice Dragon. I think he wrote it in, like, 1983, but it's a super cute, like, little girly love-dragon-hate relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You killed my family thing.
Yeah.
It's very sweet.
What haven't we talked about in this episode?
I think we got everything. I mean, I don't know.
I think because we're having a hard time, because this episode, there was so much action, and it's driving the story forward, and it was expected action. It was necessary for the story that we all know it to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the scenes that they put in are to help people who don't have the relationship building to make it a little more humane and emotional ties and all of those things. But is there anything that that anybody's like missing from the books other than what we've talked about?
I'm missing the blackfish. And I guess I'm not thrilled. I'm not pissed exactly, but I'm not thrilled with the character change, the Cersei thing of having lost the child and saying that I still loved you for some time after we lost our first child.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not in the books at all.
Yeah.
That's not at all the case.
No.
and then sort of upping the ante, introducing Renly and Loras Tyrell's relationship was pretty cool, actually. I mean, that's stuff that I expected to see later. Actually, I never really expected to see an intimate scene between those two characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really didn't expect to see much of Renly at all, period.
You
don't even see him really in the books.
Yeah.
I mean, he like comes
you hear
and
that
goes
he's on the council.
Yeah.
Barely, yeah.
And you hear about how handsome he is.
Yes.
He says he
definitely
the only
wants some Stannis.
Like
yeah.
the most you hear about Renly, I think, in the first book is he has that one scene where he leaves like the night before like all the shit happens and he's all like, "Come with me, Lord Stark. I'll help you out." And Lord Stark says no. And
right.
So, but
that's his key scene.
Yeah.
Which I almost wish it would have been his key scene from this season.
Hmm.
You know, and then you kind of wonder what happens to Renly when he disappears
instead of the other sucking
that
scene.
All
the second scene
is all well and good. it seems didn't we see in the pilot there's off screen sucking happening when Tyrion is at the brothel.
It's just not quite as noisy.
Isn't it
the first shot
of the whole show was Tyrion and Roz, which Roz is making her way through each episode.
Roz really. I mean, they must really have gotten friendly with Roz.
I think because Tyrion is.
She
just
started
like,
off as a nameless character, and she's been mentioned in like every episode.
Yeah.
And
6 seasons from now, the final episode is going to be Roz coming up and saying, "This was all my plan."
Sitting on the iron throne.
She's going to be a dragon rider.
Maybe they're going to replace Shay with Roz. Like,
oh.
Maybe Roz go. You know what? I'll go visit my sister in King's Landing.
So thinking about season two, we have characters like Brienne of Tarth that we know we're gonna see, and knowing all of this that we already know about Renly, I'm excited to see how they bring in somebody like Brienne from the books and how they're gonna have to change her up a little bit to match what's going on over with Renly right now. I'm excited about stuff like that.
Stannis, Dragonstone, Miranda.
Oh my gosh! Everybody from
so
Stannis
much.
and
Melisandre,
that's what her name is.
Oh,
yeah,
Melisandre.
That's
Rose's sister.
Crazy I cannot
bitch.
Wait to see her.
I'm so excited.
The Onion Knights.
The Onion Knights. Yeah.
Davos. I will birth a shadow baby.
Boy. I hope we get Davos' backstory. That's all I want.
And following Marcella.
Like
and
with the fingers.
Getting to know her.
Yeah, and all the Dornish princesses and all that stuff.
Well, that's much later down.
That's season 4.
Yeah.
They're going to have to go to, like,
Sand Snakes.
The desert in Las Vegas to...
Maybe it would be an interesting twist if they did make it look like Las Vegas.
Right.
That's how weird Dorn is. It's modern.
They've got cell phones
so
like
much.
There's a dude with a sword.
I'm excited for River Run when that finally happens.
Yeah.
It's River Run and the towers.
I wonder,
the Freys.
Oh my gosh.
The
I want to see Lord Walder Frey. Just because
I want to see him like... played. I don't know. Like whenever I see, when I read that and him talking, it was, I have this very specific image of him, and it's really, I really hope that they share that same vision, because it'd be hilarious.
I want to hear how he does his little laugh that he always does.
Mm-hmm. I can't even think of like an actor, but like it's almost Monty Python esque to me. Like this really skinny dude, this old skinny dude that's just like, nah, my family.
You sound like the Knights of St. Me.
Yeah.
Is that what you think?
It was more like The Life of Brian, the monk in the juniper bush. Familiar with that, but that's kind of who I picture when I read about him.
What is episode 6 called, anybody?
The Gold Crown or something.
No, that's 7. I think that's number 7.
A Golden Crown.
Is that 6?
Well,
six.
I mean, we know what's going to happen.
I know,
after
but...
seeing that preview...
But
I mean,
wonder what we're not going to see. Because this, I mean, like we said, we didn't see any of the
crown,
wall.
That's for sure.
We didn't see any of the Dothraki. So no wall, no Dothraki. And I wonder next week if we see this Golden Crown... What we're not.
I think
if
maybe
we just
we
like take
like
a break
a
from King's Landing.
Of King's Landing this
week.
So.
It's gonna be the wall and Pentos.
But
and
if then
they
again, do
what's
that...
happening at the wall right now? They already got through all the.
Well,
there's something very important
Ben
that's going
Ben
to be.
Ben has disappeared. Already.
Ben Jen
that's
has
right.
disappeared.
Yeah.
And then John is gonna start to step up because the next batch is about
John
to come.
John and Sam are gonna go
exactly.
stay their vows.
Yeah.
Well, but I wonder if we don't see any of King's Landing. Maybe that's how they're gonna deal with Martin's cliffhangery sort of episodes, and you know, because
well,
we've all talked about when we read the books, it's like you get a cliffhanger, like Ned and Jory's dead, and Ned, and then you want to skip forward, but it's so awesome that you got to find out. So I wonder if they're gonna try to do some of that,
and if that's how HBO is trying to push their HBO Go thing.
Oh my gosh.
With showing
oh,
the episode
a
week earlier,
cliffhanger, and then you see what happens right away.
Yeah,
that would
with
make sense.
With 2 episodes left. So, I mean, setting up everything.
That's a pretty shrewd way to promote it, too.
Absolutely.
Get a bunch of diehard fans to all hurry up and set up their HBO Go accounts.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Crown of Gold, we've seen enough gore so far. I'm wondering what that's going to look like.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Hopefully awesome.
Yeah.
Today's
violent.
Episode was pretty violent.
I
want to
see
fight.
His face melt off.
With the stabbing in the head, with this pointing into the shield multiple
I'm
times,
just saying,
yeah.
like,
and we saw it go into the head. It wasn't just a crunch; it was. Oh
and I
gosh.
Do have to say, I have been waiting for a sword in the eye since the intro,
yep.
but we did not get the sword in the eye. So
yep.
thank you, HBO, for giving Jory a sword in the
I just,
eye.
And that was even telegraphed, or not telegraphed exactly, but I mean, how cruel of Jaime to remember, I want to kill Jory this way, because they have that conversation last episode. About how he almost
right.
lost his eye in the Siege
yeah.
of Pike.
Right.
And that's just like, all right, that's what...
That's fucked.
I've got an idea. What should happen to you?
Knife through the head. Is that the way that he attacked, or that... I know he died, but I can't remember if it was Jaime that killed him in that fight in the books.
I don't know if it even
I
says.
I don't
if it
think
just said they fought
right.
and he was slain.
You know, the way I remember it was Jaime didn't really even get involved. I don't
yeah.
even think he got off his horse.
Yeah.
I don't think he did either.
I think he just commanded all his boys to go to work, and he just sort of sat there laughing, and then he rode off
yeah.
even before he knew what happened.
Mm. Yeah, you're right about that. You are right about that,
yeah.
about him riding off early.
But this was a good character building moment.
Absolutely.
Well, so we've only got a few minutes left. Let's go around the table and everybody just give a parting thought or what your favorite scene was. Eric?
I have to say that I'm really enjoying how they are developing the Lannisters. I think they're making them much more three-dimensional because you don't really get to see much of the Lannisters except from the Stark point of view in the first couple books. And I'm really fascinated with Cersei and even Jaime. Like, in the end, he has the honor to end the fight after his guardsman wounds Ned, and I just thought that was a really interesting moment. I liked all kinds of stuff in this episode. It's hard for me to pick something favorite, but I just like how they're demonstrating everything we've been talking about taking all this, you know, character buildup that you get from reading the books and seeing their train of thoughts, and instead simplifying it in like just little scenes that they're introducing early on, like the stuff with Renly or I thought the Varys Baelish was an interesting addition to things, and so yeah, I guess just all around little tidbits I'm enjoying.
Cool. Thanks, Eric. Molly?
I really liked the Arya stuff, the whole, the guys who were guarding the gate calling her boy, and that whole setup. Just with her being her little fierce self and saying, I want to hit you in the face, go away and let me see my dad. And then, you know, next shot is her facing the wrath of father in front. But hearing them call her boy and somebody else calling her boy is really setting up what is to come for her. And I thought that was a really clever way to put it in.
Not just calling her boy necessarily, but also showing when she's walking into the castle from outside the castle and she just looks like a dirty little kid,
mm-hmm.
that she's completely defenseless.
Right.
And, mm-hmm. you know, apart from speaking like a little princess to the guards to make them think
right.
twice, that's important for her character later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. And we didn't talk about it because we all of us already know, yes, that's what needs to happen right now. So, but I loved it all the same. She's my favorite.
I don't know if I could pick out a favorite point of this episode, but this was definitely one of my favorite episodes so far. So I guess my parting thought, I was just thinking about that, was that Mark Addy was in another production where they had jousting and tournaments, and it was a lot better HBO. So
that's the jousting scenes?
In A Knight's Tale.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I didn't want these tournaments to look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the queen in the background.
With the queen in the background.
Yeah. We will rock you.
Yeah.
Religion and politics. I think they have handled politics pretty well because, how can you avoid it in this series? I mean, that's so much part of the series. But I really have been disappointed in their lack of following the mystical and religious nature of these people. I think that the difference between the seven gods and the old gods, I think is really important, and I think they just have not spent any time on that at all. And I think, we rarely if ever see the Weirwood, we rarely if ever see any of the mystical things that are in this world. And while in the books it's not like over exposed in a way that makes it seem unrealistic, like with the dragons, for instance, there's dragons in this world, but it makes sense because it's not like overexposed, and there's only a few and they haven't been around for 150 years, but
I sort of remember the religion not being all that well explained by the end.
Not
of the till first
later part. On, not till much later on. But we did get a little peek this episode with the sisters.
A little bit, yeah.
Like there was a teeny little peek in that scene.
And they're giving us throwaway lines like old gods and new. I swear,
yeah.
Right, exactly.
Like
and
yeah.
I want a little bit more of that, and like to just to see a little bit more of that, and like how that fits into this world. Because, like I had said, was talking about earlier, where they're pulling things from future books, for people that don't know the material
mm-hmm.
coming into the series, I think it's important. And it's such a large part of this book that I think that's missing.
What I always thought was interesting is that up north, that's where most of like the superstitious and mystical stuff is going on, whereas down south in King's Landing, it's like this is the big city religion is a convenience. let's all behave kind of thing.
Certainly.
Yeah, but I would.
Well, and the old gods and the new.
You
got the old gods up north, and you got the new gods down south, and.
Well, maybe it'll be a plot point that they bring up when we see Melisandre, because that's one of the times where it really comes to a head.
That, and I think. But I also think, it's important with what's coming soon as far as what's coming from the north.
Yeah.
That is important as far as the old gods are concerned.
Yeah. Right, yeah. It makes sense.
I think it's something they might be able to bring up when John and Sam take their vows, because they do it.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. Especially if they show how everybody else does their vows and they say, can we go to find a... Weirwood.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That'll draw a nice contrast.
That would be a good time. My favorite part of the episode probably was when they're attacked on the road to the Vale. And not just because that's like one of my favorite story arcs, everything like happens to Tyrion on the way up there, and his developing relationship with Bronn, which is perfect. No perfect so far. Mm-hmm. But the attack was just out of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just like, holy, it was like visceral. Mm-hmm. It was intense. And it would
kind of rock on the face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, awesome. And then these guys are running, and it's just like, okay, we've been sitting around and talking for 3 episodes, and all of a sudden, guys are throwing shit at us.
And it was a nice setup. It was even a throwaway setup. Like, these are the least of your worries. Not really.
Yeah.
They're here.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think that's probably my favorite scene of this, too. Maybe for a slightly different reason, is that I'm really enjoying what's happening in the playing of Caitlin and Tyrion. And how that's coming, and especially with that great scene
where he's like, you know...
And he makes the choice to, like, go and help her. Mm-hmm. And well, that is the right thing to do, that he does have a conscience.
I think also, from a perspective of someone who just likes TV, I thought that scene was just really well constructed.
Yeah.
He's
looking at the horses... And then he's not quite sure.
Right.
Yeah.
But he's watching, like, the guy that's attacking Caitlyn.
And she's
even
all like,
I've got a knife.
Even like character development and things like that. I mean, it was one of the better scenes as far as how it was written. I mean, from the very start, they're doing a pan and you pass Arion or however
Marillion
or whatever. Yeah, yeah. And he's just got that 5-second spot and you already hate him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just fantastic. I mean, it was like, you know, going through a page and a half in a book that's 700 pages and getting that out of that. And I liked that very much.
I'm already getting sad about Ned. Like that, watching him being pinned down with that spear in his leg.
And he stayed up there, man, until those dudes rode away.
Oh,
like, yeah,
he was,
you know?
Just that final moment with that, I'm like, oh.
Thank God
for
Sean Bean.
Yes.
Yeah, no, he's great.
Because he just stood, just kneeling there and shaking.
No, they do a really good job of making each character human and having good and bad qualities and all those things. And Ned is one of the very, very few that have way more good qualities than bad.
Yeah.
So
no,
it says something about the world and the series when he does die that
mm-hmm.
it's like, oh, this noble, honorable thing is dead. And you've got everybody's sort of their good and evil parts of themselves
mm-hmm.
and they're forced to choose a side, and most of them just choose to fend for themselves and survive. But it's interesting to me that the one that is the best of them all.
And the people that are left that have that same thing about them at the end are ultimately Rob and John. And Bran, you know?
I just hope that because of all of the ways they've been making them... Okay, that's okay.
Well, it's okay. We can
disagree
on that.
No, that's fine. I'm not going to get into that right now.
We can disagree on that. Because
we're ending the episode.
That's right.
The sneak preview, we do get to see Rob... coming to terms with does he have to, what does he do?
Well, he's figuring it out right now, you know. He doesn't have the benefit of having Ned's, you know, 40, 50 some odd years of experience, you know.
Yeah.
Rob's figuring it out, but I think he has that inherent sense of honor.
And he's got
certainly
Theon to help him.
Cool. The shit is about to hit the fan at Winterfell.
I'm from the Island.
She's about to hit the fan all over the Seven Kingdoms.
They don't deserve the Kraken to be their sigil.
And the eggs and the blood next time. Eggs and
blood.
Eggs and blood.
Eggs and
Sounds
blood.
Like a breakfast.
Eggs and blood.
I don't know.
Episode 7, eggs and blood.
See? Done. HBO.
Change it.
We got your titles right here.
All right. Well, thanks, everybody. We'll see you again next week for episode 7, You Win or You Die.
Oh, wait. Is that 7? I thought it was
We're
Golden Crown.
Oh,
six.
My God.
Yeah.
Do it again.
Take two.
We can record this.
And yeah, it's...
Keep that for next week.
Well, I guess that's a sneak peek episode that will be available next week. So technically, you might catch us...
Okay, now how are we going to do... Is it the entire episode? We watch one episode, we go to HBO Go, and we watch it. And then we have nothing to do for 2 weeks.
We could do a double podcast. We could do 2 separate episodes the same night, and then take a week off, or we could just pretend that
we
digital ever happened and just watch them a week apart.
We could just taunt people for a week.
What do you want us to do, listeners? Leave us your comments and let us know if you want to, and want, or if you want us to wait and do it like everybody else. Or
I want you to wait well and said. Do it like everyone else as a listener.
go to Dark Words Dork with Dark.
Chuck is in a little too much of that good wine up here.
The strong wine. DarkWingsDorkWords.com and post a comment to this podcast and let us know what we should do next week.
Yeah. Dark Wings, Dork Words, a Game of Thrones podcast. Conceived by Chuck Davis. Produced by Boombox Productions, recorded in Omaha, Nebraska. Featuring Chuck Davis, Amy Bertasini, Eric Grantliana, Eric Salonis, Molly Welsh, Brendan J.D. Riley, and Arch. Join us next week at DarkWingsDorkWords.com for coverage on Episode 7, A Golden Crown. And join me right now for a moment into the gag reel of DarkWingsDorkWords.com. This particular clip was created when we were trying to record a sucking noise for Episode 6, The Wolf and the Lion, otherwise known as the gratuitous sucking episode. Here's what happened. Will you just do it by yourself? Because I like yours a lot.
Just do it by yourself. You win the sucking.
Please, please. Thank you, Arch, ladies and gentlemen, for the gag reel. That was Arch sucking, so that we could put it in the title sequence.
I feel like I want to be king.
Do you really feel this way?